Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Thank you so much for agreeing to talk to us today.
Where are you?
I'm in Melbourne, Australia.
Okay, cool.
Well, actually out in Gippsland, I should say, but yeah.
Okay. All right, I'm in Sydney.
Awesome. Well, Bill, I had a chance to sit down and watch the film, and I've got to say, this is an absolutely fascinating film for lovers of Australian cinema, and I was wondering if you could start off by telling us a little bit about how the film came about being made in the first place.
Well, I came, I've been here 40 years, right? In 79, I came down here with my first feature script. I wanted to do a film called Philip and Benny Long, which I wrote from London, and I wanted to make a film about first contact because I had done a lot of work in the Amazon and Borneo and New Guinea. Then I went into, after film school, I went in to make docos, which I sold on to the BBC. And I just got sort of tired of docos and that first contact situation, acculturation, one culture on top of another. And I wanted to create a feature film, and I found the Benny Long story, and it was just the best research story of a lot. And there were seven diaries running at that time. Everyone wanted to run a diary. In fact, in 1979, I was researching it from London, and of course, Australia wasn't a big word at that time. People didn't even know where it was. I went to the library looking for a book called Sydney, First 4 Years, and the librarian came back after half an hour and said she'd been all through the child-rearing section and can't find it anywhere. So, you know, that's how much people knew about Benny Long and Philip and Sydney. So I came down here to make that film. And then I fell in love with Australia. But in making, and we didn't get it up. I sold the option to McElroy's, but it was just too expensive. You couldn't make, you know, Sydney Town and all those, the First Fleet and all that at that time. It was just too costly. But I met Benny Long at I met Gopal at the time because he was going to be the obvious Benny Long. And you know the story of Benny Long, do you?
Yes, yep.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, we got to know each other, and he told me about the story he had called Billy West, and I said, let's do something about it. And I took the opportunity also to go back to the BBC, where I had done a lot of work while I was in London, because I stayed in London 10 years after film school. And I went back to them. I said, how about making a film about David? So I made it, you know, with a co-pro with them, and I just followed him to L.A. mainly because he was going over there to do a thing for a film called The Right Stuff. He was doing a sequence for them. You know The Right Stuff? You remember that film?
Yes, yeah. Actually, I've been trying. I know about the film. I haven't seen it, but I'm trying to hunt it down at the moment.
Yeah, it's a film about the first astronauts. And anyway, there's just a tiny little scene in the desert where the Aborigines are all sitting around watching the thing go across the sky. And of course, they couldn't afford, they didn't want to send a crew down here and work with real Aborigines. So they sent David up there and used some American Negroes to do it. So David got paid well, and he had a bit of money, so, you know, we went around L.A., and then came back, and I went up to Arnhem Land with him, and then we had the basis of a film, and then I did a lot of research about Aboriginals in film, and realized that he was the very first. He was the very first who went on, you know, was the first unblacked white man, really. Up to that time, everyone else blacked themselves up, except for what's the main one that was shot in the 50s, Jeddah. Jeddah. You know, Jeddah was the very first film. And then David came along and made Walkabout. And then by the time I took him to L.A., he had four films in Los Angeles playing. People recognized him in the streets. People would stop him, get his autograph. And, yeah, he was very, very popular.
You mentioned before that in England that Australian cinema wasn't very big. Did they know about Walkabout in England at that time as well, or was the popularity of Walkabout more in America?
No, Walkabout was an English film. It was made by Nicholas Rogue, who was an Englishman, and he used his son in there, and Jenny Agutter, they're all English, yeah. So, no, it's an English film, but it had a good, strong following. It became a cult film all around the world. It wasn't a box office hit, but it was a good art house film. You know, at that time, art house cinema was pretty big everywhere. So it had a good run, definitely. So everybody knew who David was. It had a big following. But also he had a Richard Chamberlain film, The Last Wave. He had a Dennis Hopper film, Mad Dog Morgan, and Americans knew him through Dennis Hopper film. And then he had Storm Boy. Yeah, and, you know, these were four big films playing there. And so he was, girls would steal him. I mean, we stayed in two different hotel rooms in the hotel, and the girls would just come knock on his door, and I'd go in to find him. There'd, you know, be a note there to say, "We've taken David away for the day. We'll see you this evening." So, yeah, no, he was incredibly popular. But, you know, he was familiar with traveling in the outside world by that time. You know, he'd been everywhere. He'd been to New York and London and Paris and, you know, but they were all always short hauls, and he was on a quick trip. But this time we had a bit of time to play around and introduce him to the American Indians. He wanted to meet the American blacks, you know, being black, he wanted to meet with blacks. But very early on, he realized that he didn't really have any relationship with them. There was no real connection. They were just black Americans, as far as he was concerned. They had the same capitalistic needs and desires. They didn't care about the land or Mother Earth or any of that. As soon as he connected with the American Indians, that was his soul. They were his soulmates. So he went around to a couple of reservations, and he performed for them, and they talked to him about land rights and all of that sort of thing. So he became a little more political in that time, he had a lot to say to them as well, but he was raw. You know, he was like, now these are city Indians living outside LA and that sort of thing, and he was, you know, like, he could perform, and they were just blown away. You know, he'd play the didgeridoo and stamp in the dust around the campfire we had, and they would just blow him away. Yeah, so he worked in, you know, he could we did a good morning Los Angeles at 7 o'clock in the morning, and we had drinks with Muhammad Ali the night before, you know, so he could play with the big boys, but he could also play with the Indians. He's still like that. He can still run with both worlds.
Yeah. What was David's first reaction when you mentioned the documentary to him and said that you wanted to make a documentary about him, but also about his journey to America?
Well, he was keen because we both wanted to get Billy West up. We were going to make that together. So it was a way to promote Billy West, and to find, one of the reasons we were in LA was to find American Indians to run with us. We got Fee St. Marie to play the leading lady. We got Max Gale to play the leading man. So we got to meet those Hollywood people as well. We went to see Clint Eastwood. And he was keen. You know, he was keen. I mean, he loves being in front of camera. He loves cameras. He loves film. You know, he's a real filmmaker. This would have been a great thing for him to do, to actually co-direct this thing. You know, we got caught in the 10BA thing, the first 10BA, and we got, we just didn't get it up.
Yeah.
And by that time, we had built bets. days you could spend the money as you raised it. Nowadays, you know, they've changed all the rules. You have to have all your money in the bank in escrow before you can spend the first penny. But we spent pennies as the money was coming in from investors. We built sets up there, and we hired cattle and brought on extras and started training extras and that sort of thing. But then 10BA didn't come through, and we didn't finish, so we lost a lot of money on that, yeah. And we never got around to do it again because the fires came through, as they do every year up there, burnt all sets, all the cattle went back, and you know, everyone lost interest, really. We never could get it back up again.
Yeah. Being a fan of both of them, I have to ask, what was the meeting like between Clint Eastwood and David? That must have been something special.
Oh, they loved him. They thought he was fantastic. You know, he was strange. You know, these guys have never really met anybody like that. And, you know, they're quite intelligent guys. But, you know, they've worked with a lot of people. They've never really worked with anything as quite as tribal as David. And, you know, even though he looked quite smart, he always looks good. He has a real great dress sense. And at that time, it was the John Travolta Urban Cowboy was the big thing at that time. And he went, with his money that he made from Wright stuff, he bought a hat and Levi's and a couple pairs of boots and quite a few cowboy shirts and cowboy belts and all that. And you know, so he always looked smart, and he stood out. You know, he stood out and looked smart, but he could you know, rise to any occasion.
Bill,
up to five beers.
Yeah, Bill, I know we are running out of time very quickly, but I wanted to ask before I went, what was your first impression of Arnhem Land? Because, of course, a lot of this documentary also follows David in his home state. So what was your first impressions as an Englishman of Arnhem Land?
Well, I'm an American, actually, but I went to film school in London. I married an English lady, and now I'm Australian, but I was educated in California. But, yeah, going to Arnhem Land was quite an eye-opener. It's quite an eye-opener. We went all the way out to David's. By the time that we got out there to his place, as far out as he lives on a place called Gupalo, which is a tiny little peninsula on the peninsula, you know, way out there. And it was just his mother and a couple of houses, huts. And, you know, it was so, so remote. I remember one night swatting the mosquitoes, and she just took a big stick out of the fire and just walked around and started a fire, about 50 acres of fire, just to be a mozzie repellent to keep the mozzies off of me. She says, "Here, sit down, wind." You know, that sort of, it was wild. And David just had a few things in one of the huts. He had an handwritten script of The Last Wave signed by Richard Chamberlain. He had a couple of photos of him and Peter Weir. You know, and that was it. That was his possession. By the time we got back from the States, all of that, he only had one pair of boots and one pair of Levi's. He'd given everything away. He gave his hat away. He gave another pair of boots away. Even his car got bogged in the, you know, we had a Land Rover that he bought, that McElroy's gave to him, and that was bogged. And, you know, so we literally walked into his place, the last couple of miles to his place, and his Land Rover stayed in that river until the end of that wet season when they could get it out again. Oh, you know, that's how he went back to Arnhem Land, back to real earth, really, just with one pair of boots, a pair of Levi's.
Wow. Well, Bill, it has been absolutely fascinating chatting to you, and I could chat to you all day about Australian cinema, but I know we are right out of time. But I just want to say it's been an absolute privilege chatting to you, and I hope a lot of our listeners go out and grab a copy of this documentary, because it is absolutely brilliant.
When is this going to air?
This will go to...
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.